Jesus said to them, "Therefore, every scribe who has been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like the master of a household who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. My friend Al Ham tells about the night when John Coltrane brought his quartet to his town. The venue was a pub called Gentleman Joe's. It was in a rough section of Binghamton, New York. Al and his buddy got there in enough time to get themselves a drink and then to claim some seats right next to the stage. As a saxophonist then in his early 20s, Al was curious about Coltrane, who had played with Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, and Thelonious Monk, and was now making an international name for himself. The quartet took the stage, and Al's companion nodded toward the pianist. It was Bobby Timmons, who was filling in that night, replacing the regular pianist for the group. Timmons had been friends with Coltrane since Philadelphia days. They had never recorded together, but Bobby was an outstanding pianist in his own right. Smartly dressed, he flashed a broad smile at Al as he slid onto the piano bench. Coltrane counted off the first tune, a medium tempo blues, and Timmons held his own. As the saxophonist plays the melody, then leaned off, handed off to Bobby, who began to play a hard swinging piano solo. The patrons in the club nodded in rhythm. They clapped loudly as the solo built and then concluded. Pretty soon, however, the music began to change. In recent months, Coltrane's band had begun to experiment with harmony, leaving behind chords and experimenting with modal scales. And to that was the drumming of Elvin Jones, ferocious and thundering in circular rhythms and swirls of cymbals. And Reggie Workman's bass lines moved from becoming a pulse of singular quarter notes to now heavily accented pulses, and over top of it, Coltrane launched a fusillade of notes on his soprano sax. The sounds swelled, the rhythms intensified, and suddenly, Bobby Timmons, the pianist, stopped playing. His hands sat motionless on the keyboard, his jaw dropped open. With an astonished look, he turned to my friend Al and said, "What are they doing?" Indeed, what are they doing? It's a worthy question if you listen to jazz. The music swirls around the room, alive and free, never static or fixed. It's a common experience for a jazz fan, or future jazz fan, or potential jazz fan, to hear a recording by a favorite musician and to enjoy it, and then lay down good money to go hear that same musician play somewhere, and it doesn't sound anything like the recording. What are they doing? Well, the short answer is they are creating the music as it moves along. Or to quote Homer Simpson, "Those jazz guys are just making things up." Well, true, but not really. It's more than that. They are creating something new out of something old. Now, this is risky, especially in the presence of those who appreciate the something old. Today, we have heard one of the shortest parables Jesus ever gave. He refers to the scribes of biblical times. Now, this was in the time before laser printers, before dot matrix printers, before Xerox machines, before mimeographs, long before the printing press. The scribe in his day copied everything by hand. There was a high priority on accuracy. No room for mistakes. With one scroll open here and the blank papyrus over there, the old was transferred as is. No variation. No suggested improvements. The scribes stuck to the literal text. They checked one another's work, and the most accurate work was kept. Now, to overextend the analogy, think of the scribes as classical musicians, sticking to the jots and tittles written on the page. The manuscript says, play an A flat, don't make it an A natural. Recreate what someone has created before you. And if there is going to be any interpretation, it'll largely be in the pacing or the personality of the conductor. And for the most part, the music sounds the same every time. About a week ago, we were settling in one night, and I called out, Alexa, play Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. Almost immediately, the robot in that box began to play that quiet, ascending melody in B-flat minor. The tune ascends a circular staircase for 8 minutes, never in a hurry, resonating in the heart and drawing me in. It had been a long day, draining day, and Barber's Adagio was consolation for my soul, and I knew what to expect. Now contrast that with last Saturday night. August 29th was the 100th birthday of the great saxophonist Charlie Parker. Alexa, play Charlie Parker. And I didn't know what was going to come out next. You see, in jazz, there's a continuum between interpretation and improvisation. For instance, Louis Armstrong played the popular songs of his day, adding his own special touch. That's interpretation. Yet on one particular studio date in 1926, they turned on the recording machinery, and Pops bumped into a music stand, spilling the song lyrics to fall on the floor. Well, they couldn't stop, so he had to make something up. And he ended up with a hit record. The public liked the new thing better than the old. The new and the old and the new, the scribe of the old Jerusalem temple, and the scribe of the kingdom of heaven. Jesus sides with the second one. And one of the comments about him is that whenever he preached, it was as fresh as his bread. He spoke of the same old God, but he held the interest of the crowd. He spoke of forgiveness, mercy, justice, compassion, all of them old words, but the audience heard something new. And in one of the critiques that we find in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus taught them as one having authority and not as their scribes. See, I didn't tell you, but the Gospel of Matthew doesn't like the scribes. In this Gospel, Jesus declares them stodgy and inflexible. He calls them out as hypocrites. He names them as whitewashed tombs. He accuses them of being pedantic and small-minded, ever focusing on the commas of the Torah and never truly hearing the larger message. Reminds me of what Frederick Buechner once said about righteousness. He compared it to an exasperated piano teacher who says to one of his students, "You haven't got it right." And Buechner says, "Junior is holding his hands the way he's been told. His fingering is unexceptional. He has memorized the piece perfectly. He has hit all the proper notes with deadly accuracy, but his heart's not in it. Only his fingers. What he's playing," says Buechner, "is a sort of music, but nothing will start voices singing or feet tapping. He has succeeded in boring everybody to death. including himself. In other words, in terms of the Gospel of Matthew, he is merely a scribe, a lifeless scribe, chained to the page and missing the point, especially the point of what music has the power to perform within us and among us. Now, there must be new with the old, and old with the new. If something is completely new, it will be dismissed as a curiosity. If it is completely old, it might be pronounced dead. Jesus says, every scribe who's been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like the master of a household who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old. Ah, it's both, not either or. And what he's offering is his treasure. And according to the parables of Jesus, the treasure is where we put our heart. The treasure is where we sink our soul. The treasure is that gift to which we will commit our lives. The wise person will give away everything to gain that treasure, for the wise person knows it is the one thing that gives back your life. Now, Jesus never identifies or specifies what that treasure actually is. He simply affirms there's something or somebody that demands your soul, your life, your all. And when you find it, or when it finds you, it employs your muscles and your mind, your breath and your heartbeat, your concentration and your freedom, your imagination and your delight. And you'll lose yourself in gaining the treasure. He says the kingdom of heaven is like that. Well, today, the music is both old and new. The tunes are so old they were written by somebody named Anonymous. Arising out of suffering and slavery, they name the pain and point beyond it. In five-note melodies and minor cadences, they resonate with our souls and they offer a hidden treasure called consolation. And today we played the old version of Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. See, more to the story, about the time that our friend Al was wondering what Coltrane was doing at that club in Binghamton, Coltrane had lifted that song from his grandfather's hymnal, recorded it in a nightclub called the Village Vanguard, and then retitled it Spiritual. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something really blue. These are the sorrow songs, writes W.E.B. Du Bois. This is music of an unhappy people, of the children of disappointment. They tell of death and suffering and unvoiced longing toward a truer world of misty wanderings and hidden ways. The music provides an appropriate soundtrack for this pandemic, to say nothing of moving beyond our long national nightmare of racial separation and oppression. So we play these tunes with reverence, imagination, and disciplined freedom. And we play all in the service of moving all of us from I've been in the storm so long to we shall overcome. This is the journey of our hope. It is what Du Bois calls the journey to a truer home, what Jesus calls the kingdom of heaven. So what are those jazzers doing? They're retrieving something old and making something new, sharing hidden treasure, offering deep consolation, and pointing to our redemption. And that always feels like a journey toward home.